Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Flame by Katie Cross. Narrated by Katie Cross. Chapter 1. Leaves whipped past Sana Spence's face. She hurtled through the forest, clinging to a thick vine. The bright, lush canopy of Leadham Wood flew past her and pulled strands of strawberry blonde hair from her braid. Flames flickered ahead of her near the forest floor. Sana grinned. Right where she expected them. A childhood of swinging through the trees had given her an instinct for gauging how long she could hold on, and this vine's arc would end on a sprawling branch twice as thick as she was tall. Again, just as expected. Sana unwound her foot from the vine, transferring all her weight to her hands, and braced herself. Seconds later, she landed on the mossy branch without falling off the other side, which had happened often enough in the past. For a moment, she stood on the branch, gazing down at the intermittent bursts of fire below. Witches weren't supposed to cross the dragon's border without a trained servant unless absolutely necessary. She'd promised Dade years ago to obey the rule after she'd nearly dropped onto old Helis, a grumpy gray dragon who blew fire in defiance of the rule. Then again, she wasn't exactly on dragon territory. In it, sure. If she never set foot on the ground, she'd never break her promise. Because they didn't own the trees. A high-pitched shriek echoed from nearby, followed by another snort of flame. "Don't fight over me!" she called, looping the vine around a smaller branch to use later. She used natural handholds in the trunk to work her way farther down. This tree, like most trees in this part of Leadham Wood, was wide enough to fit at least two houses inside the trunk, with room to spare. The bright spurts of fire calmed. Two young dragon heads popped around either side of the younger tree, its span as thick as only one house. Hints of color glimmered in the dragon hatchling's ebony scales. Sana stopped and crouched when she reached two tangled branches. The youngest hatchling, Rosie, spread her wings and bent all four legs, readying herself to fly toward Sana. Sana threw out a hand.
"No! Rosie, you know the rules!"
Rosie paused, then relaxed her wings with a little huff. A flying dragon was a dead dragon. Rosie knew that, but constantly tested the rules.
"Jump," Sana said. "You can make it."
Rosie snorted smoke. At 10 years old, hatchlings could only breathe about 30 seconds of fire in a day. Rosie always used hers up by mid-morning. She was the smaller of the two, but feisty, with rose-pink threads twisting through her black scales. Rosie hopped across the space between the trees, snapping her baby teeth, which spanned the length of a hand, at Sana's bag. Sana didn't have to dodge. Rosie never actually bit her. Sana held up a finger.
"Uh-uh, you have to ask nicely."
Rosie's older brother, Junis, sidled up next to his sister. At 12 years old, Junis was still considered a hatchling, though both of them already loomed over Sana. Rosie roared, exhaling another flash of smoke, then nudged Sana with the end of her snout.
"Good enough."
Sana yanked a toad from her bag and tossed it to the right. Rosie flailed to the side to catch it, slipped on a pillow of moss, and slid off the branch. With a quick movement, Sana grabbed Rosie's foreleg and yanked her back. The scales sizzled against Sana's palm until she released her.
"Sorry."
She shook her hand out.
"That was my fault."
Junis purred, ears lowered as he gently pressed his nose into Sana's leg. Slivers of charcoal gray wound through his ebony scales. She set a dead toad at his feet.
"Always so polite, Junis, thank you."
Bones crunched as the dragons chewed, squelching blood through their teeth. A low barking sound came from below. They peered over the branch. Kara, their mother, and Viridis, a lithe dragon with emerald in his black scales, circled each other. Viridis was the sneakiest dragon that Dade fed. She'd only glimpsed him a few times in the past 2 years.
"Ah," Sana murmured. "Viridis wants a hatchling."
The timing made sense. Dragons never mated for life, just for a hatchling, and the end of summer rapidly approached. A tug on Sana's shoulder drew her gaze away. Rosie had Sana's lion-skin bag in her teeth in a not-so-stealthy attempt to steal the final toad. Sana wrenched it back.
"Hey, this toad's for your ma'am."
Rosie purred, lowered her head, and inched closer. Sana grabbed another vine and slid down to the last branch before Rosie could take it. When she landed, Kara's and Viridis's heads were level with her perch. Viridis loomed more than 4 times taller than Sana, his body hot as hellfire. Hints of emerald cascaded down his regal neck like fog. 2 thick horns stuck out from the top of his head, bigger than the horns of any other male in the brood. The air shimmered against the dragon's heat. Sana pressed a hand to her heart and bowed her head.
"Ave Viridis, Kara."
Kara released a warm breath. Viridis slipped away with a growl, his slitted eyes like yellow moons. A forked tongue flickered between his black lips just before he snapped in her direction and disappeared. She relaxed. Only forest dragons could move with such strange stealth despite their massive bodies, and only forest dragons hated witches with such a passion. Well, some of them. Sana pulled out her final toad.
I'd never forget you, Kara.
Before Kara could take the treat, a shriek shattered the calm air. Both Sana and Kara whipped around to find a mangy forest lion clinging to Junis's back. Junis whipped back and forth in an attempt to throw the lion off, but it had sunk its talons into his scales, drawing ribbons of blue blood. Rosie screamed. Junis rolled off the tree branch, plummeting to the ground. At the last second, he spread his wings, slowing his fall. Rosie leapt down the tree, landing with a thud on the ground. A second lion dropped from the canopy, toppling her before she could reach Junis. It pinned her left wing and snarled.
Hey!
Sana cried, shucking her bag off.
Get away from them!
Kara screamed as she raced toward Junis. A third lion sank its teeth into Rosie's right shoulder. She threw her head back and yelped. Three more lions waited in the branches above, while two descended the tree trunks using their razor-sharp claws. Forest lions always hunted in packs. There could be as many as 10. Sana sprinted down the branch and launched herself off with a battle cry, landing on the back of one of the lions attacking Rosie. She tangled her fingers in its mane and jerked. The lion roared and sprang onto his hind feet. Sana leaned back, and they both fell. Air rushed out of her lungs when the lion landed on top of her. Pain spiraled through her ribs with a crack. The lion scrambled free, scratching her leg. Sana rolled onto her hands and knees. Black dots clouded her vision as she gasped, ribs paralyzed. Just as a tingling sensation swept over her body, her paralysis broke. She sucked in a deep breath, clearing her sight. To the left, Kara whipped her tail, knocking four lions away from Junis, who dodged beneath his mother. Rosie flopped into the bushes with a scream as a lion charged her. Sana scrambled back to her feet, cursing. She snatched the lion's coiling tail as it ran by and pulled. The beast spun away from Rosie, snapping its pearly fangs. Sana ducked as she released it. The lion's teeth bit the air a breath shy of her arm. She clawed through the undergrowth, seeking a rock, just as another lion dropped onto the ground next to her.
Mori!
She cried, and slammed a rock into the lion's jaw. It yelped and darted away. Then a lion fainted toward Rosie, and Sana threw the rock at it.
Fire, Kara! Use your demmed fire!
Kara threw her head back and roared, but issued no flames. The furious beasts swarmed her, biting at her wings and feet, and Junis. They yowled when they felt Kara's heat and jumped away from her roasting scales and swinging tail. Sapphire blood bubbled from Rosie's shoulder as she cowered in the crevice of two roots, crying. A lion barreled into Sana. She wrapped her arms around it, bringing it to the ground with her. The lion smacked his head on a tree root. He stilled, draped across her like a hot blanket. Pain shot through her side again, zipping all the way into her toes. Her right arm was pinned. At least six lions swarmed Kara now, not to mention those attacking the hatchlings. There was no way to win. Sana gritted her teeth. No hatchlings would die unless the lions killed her first. She scrambled for a dangling gorseberry bush with her left hand. Her fingers brushed it once, twice, a third time. If she could just grab it.
Oh, come on,
she cried.
Just a little.
A vine fell from the trees, smacking her in the face. Sana blinked. Where had that come from? Setting her confusion aside, she grabbed the vine with her left hand, wriggled free, and threw herself between Rosie and three approaching lions. Sana bared her teeth in a snarl.
You don't scare me.
She picked up a handful of dirt and threw it at the big cats. A cloud of yellow fumes formed, smelling like rotten eggs and salt. Sana recoiled.
What the?
The lions yipped, circled behind the cloud, and hung back, hissing.
It's all right,
Sana murmured to Rosie, reaching toward her. Blood pooled beneath her in a puddle of sapphire. Sana cursed under her breath. Dragons didn't have healing properties in their blood until they reached adolescence at 20 years old. A lion crept forward, and she grabbed a rock and lobbed it. It struck the lion in the mouth, drawing blood. He snarled. A roar shook the ground. The lion silenced, heads craned back. One crouched and slid backward, its ears flat against its head. A shadow passed by. A second roar answered. Another shadow. Flashes of gold and sapphire not far away? Sana let out a relieved breath.
Finally!
Two dragons barreled out of the trees. Talus, the broodsire, sprawled his leathery wings and lashed his teeth. A latticed sapphire design shone on his cavernous chest. Thyrus, his second-in-command, followed. Glinting gold reflected off Thyrus's scales like rivers of sunlight against a pitch-black night. Sana shrank back, dazzled. Talus snatched the closest lion and snapped its spine with a single shake of his head. He pitched it to the side and crushed another beast with his foreleg. His tail whacked a third into a tree. When it slumped to the ground, Thyrus snapped it in half. The pack scattered away from Kara, clawing up the trees. Thyrus sliced at another lion, sending it flying through the air. Blood spurted in a crimson arc behind the lion as it fell. For a second, silence overtook the forest. Rosie let out a cry. Thyrus whipped around, his pupils shrunk to pinpricks. He focused on Sana, snarled and lunged. Sana held up two hands and dropped to her knees.
No!
He paused an arm's length away, teeth bared, his heat rolling over her palms in scalding waves. She swallowed, heart pounding.
I am daughter of Drago's servant and servant to the dragons.
Kara made a noise in her throat. Thyrus backed away, his bloodlust dissipated, snorted and turned his back to Sana. Sana relaxed. Talus stared at her with a queer gaze, no doubt because she was here, of all places, breaking the agreement. Blood dripped from his mouth and hit the forest floor in steaming beads. He loomed taller than any of the 26 dragons in the brood, at least 6 times her height, cowing her with his terrible majesty. She diverted her gaze and stepped away from Rosie.
She's hurt.
Talus advanced. In a swift movement, he scored his foreleg with a claw. Thick cerulean blood rose from beneath his scales and dribbled down. He lifted it over Rosie, allowing the blood to run onto her wounded shoulder. Rosie cowered, trembling. The blood hit her scales and sizzled, smoking in great plumes. Bubbles frothed from her shoulder. Once they stilled, Talus stepped back. Rosie calmed. Then Talus moved to Junis, who trembled beneath Kara. A massive rent marred Junis's left wing, and scratches covered his forelegs and belly. Talus used his blood to heal Junis, just as he had Rosie, and then he turned to Kara. Though they remained silent, the three seemed to converse as they regarded one another. Dragons understood witches when they spoke, but couldn't speak back. At least, not audibly. Talus communicated with Dade through his mind. Dade had bonded with him years before, when he became Drago's servant. With Talus standing there, Sana hardly dared to breathe. She'd never been alone with the broodsire, let alone the broodsire and his apprentice. Being near Talus felt like standing next to something too bright. Uncomfortable, though fascinating. She kept her eyes down. The moments passed in near silence. A forest as ancient and expansive as Ledum Wood was never quiet. As her body calmed, a sweeping agony overcame her. Her ribs ached. Every breath sent shooting pain through her core. Blood dribbled down her leg from the wound in her thigh. An easy price to pay for the hatchling's safety. Thyrus and Talus ignored her as they gathered up the dead forest lions in their teeth and left with a flick of their tails. The leaves barely rustled in their wake. She hung her head in relief. Talus had been merciful. No doubt he'd ignored her presence because she'd helped save the hatchlings. Kara leaned down, pressed her snout against Sana, and blew a warm breath on her feet. The grasses stirred. Sana reached out, touching Kara's scales briefly. She thought of the vine that had fallen at the perfect moment. The mustard-yellow smoke that emerged from the dirt. Magic. It had to be. A cold shiver rushed through her. Magic was expressly forbidden, just like dragons were prohibited from flying or using fire. But it had been magic. There was no other explanation. Where had it come from? Had she somehow conjured it herself? Impossible. She hated magic. Sana pressed her hand to Kara's warm snout when she nuzzled back.
You're welcome, she murmured. Let's just hope Dade doesn't find out.
Isadora Spence glared at her teacup. Beams of dusty light streamed through the kitchen, illuminating the locks of golden hair that drifted all the way down her back. The smell of oil, toast, and peppermint tea filled the air. Wooden pots of oil paints, carved from chunks of wood, fanned around her. A gentle lavender for petals, olive to bring out the wispy background. Her paintbrush raced across the teacup with practiced ease, leaving a swirl of vermilion in its wake, until it smudged. Honestly, she muttered. Tension thrummed through her head like a line of hot wire, remnants of a headache that had started the day before. Felt like nothing compared to last week's enduring headache, triggered by some unknown cause. Just like all of them. Isadora stared at the flower on the side of the new teacup with a frown. Why didn't it look right? A quick glance at the original teacup confirmed that everything matched. Crimson flowers, dark backdrop, hints of yellow in the leaves. But something was off. She set her paintbrush in a bowl of mineral potion for cleaning and quirked her lips to one side. Her gaze flickered around the room. No one present to witness what she was about to do. She held the cup in front of her eyes and whispered an incantation. The teacup levitated from her hand to hover in front of her. Paint swirled on the cup, directed by the magic. The elongated petals shrank. The mossy green leaves expanded, nearly filling the space. She sucked in a sharp breath. Of course. Too much red, not enough olive. She shook her head, then regretted it. Her headache pulsated as if it would fill her mind. She pressed a hand to the side of her head. Oh, why wouldn't they go away already? Izza? She snatched the cup from the air and set it down. Yes, ma'am. Ma'am's skirts twirled around her thin legs when she shuffled into the kitchen with an armful of wildflowers. Her strawberry blonde hair sat in a bun at the base of her neck, accentuating her light hazel eyes, the color of late summer grasses. Delicate, soft pink hyacinths and petals o' blue flowers peeked out from the top of her bundle. The sunburnt head of a roaring bell bloom sprawled out like a sun flare at the bottom. Oh, ma'am cried. Look at that cup. Perfection, Izza, as always. What? Oh, yes, thanks. Did you see what I found? Ma'am's eyes twinkled. She nodded toward the roaring bell. Isn't it perfect? Isadora fixed a smile on her face. Yes, lovely. Roaring bells are for harmony, you know. Every marriage needs harmony. How are you feeling? Is painting making the headache worse? Sometimes the fumes. No, I'm fine. Ma'am frowned. You're still quite pale. We need to visit Lucy and see about a different potion, I think. This last batch isn't powerful enough anymore. I'll go see her tomorrow. Ma'am shot her an appraising look. She set the flowers on a chair, the table was clogged with paints, and studied them with a tilted head. Have you written in your prayer journal for the day yet? Sort of. What's that mean? It's in my head. That doesn't count. Have you memorized a line from the Chronicles? The cessation of servant loyalty to the great beast of the forest would end the ancient agreement, resulting in total destruction of witch and dragon. Very good. Luckily, ma'am didn't notice it was the same line she'd used yesterday. Isadora eyed the pile of flowers with a feeling of dread. She had to find a way out of the kitchen. She wouldn't be in here when ma'am brought out the full courting bouquet. She couldn't. I'm getting a bit dizzy in here, ma'am. Perhaps I could finish the tea set tomorrow? The delicate ivory curves of the teacups yet to be painted drew Isadora's attention. They sparkled in the sunshine. Their strange opalescence from dragon egg powder. Their only real luxury out here in the middle of the forest. Isadora painted them once ma'am finished firing them in her kiln. All witches in Angui had to contribute some kind of work. This was Isadora's, her only work. Babs Chandler stopped by last night. Ma'am shuffled a few of the flowers, then stood on the chair next to them. Several hooks hung on strings from the ceiling for drying flowers, for Isadora's gargantuan courting bouquet. Oh? Isadora squeaked. What could Babs possibly want? She wanted to talk about our plans for Midsummer this year. There are ideas afoot in the Chandler house. Babs Chandler, one of the three servant wives, was the mother of Jesse, Isadora's longtime betrothed. Her midsummer plans could only mean a hand-fasting ceremony. Don't ask, Isadora wanted to plead. She gripped the back of the kitchen chair. Please don't ask me what day I want to marry Jesse next summer. A quick rap at the back door grabbed Isadora's attention, cutting the conversation short. Relieved, Isadora ran over and threw the door open. Ave! Her heart nearly stopped. Jesse stood just outside, hat in his hands and a nervous smile on his face. Jesse! Here, now, with pieces of her courting bouquet tossed all over the kitchen, as if she'd known he'd be here and wanted to send him a silent message. She assuredly did not. Oh, she forced a smile. Hi, Jesse. Can I help you?
I came with a message for your ma'am.
She's sick. Deathly so. Coughing. Plague, I hear. You better not. Jesse! Ma'am called brightly as she glided past the door with a grin. Come inside. Don't mind me. I'm just grabbing Isadora's courting bouquet. We've been working on it for years now. Lots of blessings waiting to be realized from that one. Her sing-song voice sent Isadora's face into a hot blush of mortification. Ma'am disappeared, stepping into her bedroom where the wretched bouquet lived.
Well?
Mam hissed from the other room.
Let him in!
Isadora opened the door wider, gaze cast down. There would be no recovering from this. Please, she whispered, swallowing. Come in.
Oh, no, can't. Thanks. Mam sent me over to tell Roxy that she could trade tubers this week if needed. We broke a few plates and could use some extras in exchange.
Isadora perked up. Of course. We'd be happy to help. I'll bring them over tomorrow. He managed a hesitant smile.
Sure.
Jesse had a swath of thick brown hair, broad shoulders, and big hands. Though he was built like a barrel, he only just met Isadora's height. What he lacked in height, however, he made up for in pure brawn. No one in Angui was stronger than Jesse, even if he was only 17, Isadora's age. An age, she had long ago decided, far too young for marriage. Unfortunately, no one in their tiny forest village seemed to agree. Thanks. She braided her fingers together. How are you?
Good.
She nodded. Silence fell over them. Your family? She asked, then regretted it. She'd seen his entire family 2 days ago, at the Angui monthly dinner, where all three families gathered at the shelter to eat.
Fine. Are you excited about the Selectus? Coming up soon, isn't it?
Her stomach clenched. In 2 weeks, the dragons would decide her inevitable fate by selecting her as an apprentice. Because, Drago forbid, what witch could choose well for themselves? After the Selectus, she'd serve the dragons for as long as she could bear it. If she reached a month, she'd be impressed, although most served for 2 years. Then she'd prepare to handfast Jesse in the summer. That's what the women of Angui did. Unless they were Sana. Since she was taking over as the next family servant, she wouldn't be pressured to marry young. Sometimes Isadora wished she liked the dragons. Yes, Isadora said, forcing a bright tone. The words seemed to stick in her teeth. The Selectus is coming up fast. He nodded and tapped his hat against his leg. With a discreet shift to the side, he attempted to peer around her into the house. He quickly slid back over with a bright blush of his own.
Is, Sana home?
No, she's out somewhere in the trees, like usual.
Well, I better go.
Thanks. He nodded, a few strands of hair falling into his eyes. He brushed them out with a flick of his hand. Another awkward moment passed between them.
Allay, Isadora,
he said, using the traditional Dragonian farewell. Allay, Jesse. Isadora watched him go, attempting to conjure some spark of emotion deep in her chest. Finding nothing, she turned away. Mam stood off to the side, out of sight, her eyes wide. That was adorable, she said. The two of you will make a lovely couple. Isadora returned to the table, setting lids back on her paint pots. May I ask a question, ma'am? Of course. How long did you train as an apprentice before you handfasted Dade? 6 months. Six? Isadora cried. So long? Yes. Far longer than Isadora had expected ma'am to have lasted. Did you like it? Ma'am hesitated, one hand raised halfway to another flower. She'd married into Angui as an outsider after meeting Dade during a fall supply visit. Mam was 17 when she gave up all contact with her family, and the rest of the world, to live in the safety of their forest world. She'd never once returned to her childhood home. I enjoyed getting to know more about the dragons, of course. Remember, I was an outsider. I knew almost nothing, just like Adelina Parker. Only she came from the Eastern Network, so her challenges were twice as difficult. Did you like hunting for and feeding the dragons? I won't tell Dade what you say. For a moment, a shadow passed over Mam's eyes. Isadora waited. No, I didn't. Don't misunderstand me. I care deeply for the dragons. They are majestic, wonderful creatures, but it was a relief to be done trapping and stalking. I don't enjoy being dirty. Mam's nose wrinkled. The carcasses smelled horrible, like rot. To Isadora, the dragon's sharp fangs and surly growls had always been more terrifying than majestic. They stalked through the forest in near silence, spurting smoke just because they could. The thought of traipsing through Leadham Wood, dragging heavy metal traps and handling dead creatures made Isadora want to gag. Mam shrugged. It gave me the chance to get used to Angui as an outsider, though, and the dragons honored me for it. They don't expect every witch to be a servant. We can serve them many other ways, too. Was it hard to leave the network behind? No, it's chaos there. Witches killing each other, inflicting pain, using magic to harm. Talis offers a much calmer, safer life without murder or magic. It's much better here, Izza. Trust me on that. Magic, Isadora murmured, feeling a thrill deep in her body. She cleared her throat, casting a sidelong glance at Mam.
I wish I could use it.
Mam frowned. That's enough talk of that. Isadora opened her mouth, but shut it again. Mam tolerated no talk of anything so prohibited as magic. Aside from Mam, Adelina, and Lucy, who had left Anguy for 5 years to be formally trained as an apothecary, no one in Anguy knew how to use spells or incantations. Neither Mam nor Adelina dared. Lucy never spoke of it, but secretly taught Isadora small spells whenever she went to refill her headache potions.
Mam, I'm nervous, Isadora whispered. About having babies?
Fire flared in her cheeks.
No, ma'am! Egads, where did that come from?
Sorry. Lost in my own thoughts. You're worried about the Selectus next week.
Yes.
She patted Isadora's back. Kara will probably choose you. She's very sweet. She was barely into adolescence when I was an apprentice, you know, and mild even then. Rarely threw fire. Her hatchlings are old enough Talus would allow it.
What if I don't want to be an apprentice?
Something slapped her mouth. Isadora gasped, rearing back. She parted her lips to speak, but couldn't. The light prickle of magic wrapped around her throat. Mam glared daggers at her.
Why would you say an ungrateful thing like that? She whispered. Someone could hear you. A dragon could hear you.
A cold knot of fear tightened Isadora's stomach. Her lips tingled. Mam never spoke so sharply. The magic slipped away, freeing her to speak again.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I just asked a question.
Mam's neck relaxed. She dropped her arms to the side.
A stupid question at that. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have used magic on you. I reacted instinctively. Please don't tell your dade. The dragons are our life, Isadora. They're your legacy. It's just, if the dragons were to hear you, can you imagine?
No, she couldn't.
May I go to Lucy's now?
Isadora asked, her voice low. Throbbing pain flared at the base of her head.
I need my potions refilled.
Mam glanced at the scattered flowers on the table, her shoulders stiff. Be back in time for your lessons. Isadora grabbed her potion bottles from the cupboard, rushed out the door, and breathed a sigh of relief when she left the heavy perfume of her courting bouquet far behind her. Maybe today Lucy would teach her an invisibility incantation. Maybe even one to make her future invisible. Chapter 2. Halfway to Lucy's, the trail thinned into a gnome track. No one visited Lucy unless they were sick. Even then, Babs, Mam, or Adelina, the three servant wives, normally attempted to care for the ill ones before going to Lucy. Ever since she'd chosen to leave Anguy, and not marry and make babies to be dragon servants, everyone had regarded her as an oddity. Lucy didn't seem to mind. She spent time with her birds in happy solitude. Isadora deeply envied her. Isadora pulled her uneven hem higher on her legs to avoid mud stains as she walked. No use getting Mam more worked up. Bulbous violet potion bottles the size of her thumb clinked in her pocket. Lucy would fill them with her most powerful headache potion. Isadora would drink them. Nothing would change, just like the whole last year. She let go of her dress and pulled the bottles out of her pocket, studying them. Would the headaches ever go away? A haughty, unfamiliar voice jolted Isadora from her thoughts.
Finally.
Isadora gasped, leaping back. A male witch, slightly taller than she, stood on the trail. His mop of thick black hair shone in the blunted light. A single curl dropped onto his forehead, leading to cutting green eyes that pierced through her. The bottles crashed into glittering purple shards at her feet. Isadora backed against a tree.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
He wore finer material than her plain homespun linen. The kerchief around his neck gleamed like the slick scarf Mam had tucked away, her only memory of her former life. His jacket fit impeccably over his shoulders, running to his wrists like it had been tailored for him. A gold chain drooped from a pocket over his right breast.
I'm not here to eat you, he muttered.
He said a quick spell, and the glass shards hovered above the ground. After a burst of light, all four vials swayed in the air between them, not a single crack to be found.
You dropped those.
Egads, that must have been a complicated spell.
One of his eyebrows rose higher than the other. She snatched the dangling bottles and jammed them into her pockets. One bottle fell through a hole in the bottom, shattering again. He rolled his eyes. Isadora ignored it. At least 20 paces lay between them. If he attacked, she could still dart away.
Your eyes are 2 different colors, he said. That's very odd.
So are you.
Odd, he murmured.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?